The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We've been talking a lot about hospital overcrowding at this time of year. The problem may not be brushed under the rug for another 12 months, such is the national outcry. The man at the centre of the public's disgust is Minister for Health Stephen Donnelly. How has he handled the situation so far? How can he fix the health service that has been rotten for so long? Well, joining me to talk about the Minister's performance and the politics of this crisis is the political editor of the Irish Examiner, himself a cyclist, by the way, Daniel McConnell. Danny, good morning and welcome.
How are you?
Now, I won't talk to you about cycling, but I will talk to you about the recycling of a story every year.
Yeah.
Hospital trolleys.
It is like deja vu. And even there were those of us who were out at a press conference that Stephen Donnelly gave outside Beaumont Hospital last Tuesday night to kind of an indication that he's busy at work and, you know, visiting A&E departments, etc. That, like, the sense of deja vu is almost kind of, you know, it's depressing because, you know, what we hear from the opposition is, why weren't you ready? You know, you have a winter plan. Why wasn't it, you know, enacted properly? And what we've subsequently heard is that, you know, the capacity of the hospital system wasn't anywhere near where it could have been in terms of everyone deployed where they should have been. We know that up to 850 beds have been kind of out of action, either because of infection
control. I saw that story in the Irish Times today. So we got onto the HSE because it seemed like that's crazy. Because if you had 850 beds active, then your problem is solved. You know, get everyone off a trolley into a bed. But they say our hospitals continue to operate a system of early identification of patients with respiratory viral infection who require isolation and testing for COVID-19 or other viruses to help find people with an infection as quickly as possible so that measures can be taken to reduce the risk of the spread of infection. And they give us chapter and verse. For example, January 1, 152 beds were unavailable or closed. Of these, 124 were due to infection control. So what they're saying is that the beds every day, there are different numbers open or closed.
Yeah.
And it's only on a daily basis or, you know, every second day that it happens. For example, January the 9th, 71 beds unavailable or closed. So this 850 is not a permanent figure.
Yeah, but the point I was going to make, Pat, is that it's not just infection control. Stephen Donnelly in that press conference has said there are a number of beds that are also closed because they don't simply have the staff. And that's, you know, in more rural areas and kind of out of Dublin and out of the more urban areas, the staffing is a real problem. And that is leading to real difficulties.
Yeah, in the Times, I think it says that 113 or something like that are definitely closed because of lack of staffing. And there's another few beds who are not available because there's no staffing at weekends.
Yes. So like there are, it's not a one-size-fits-all problem across the country. There are definite regional discrepancies and differences happening. So you might say, you look at University College or University Hospital Limerick and Galway under significant pressure. Both their A&Es are deemed to be not fit for purpose. There's a lack of space, but there is also a lack of staff.
Yeah. I keep mentioning Brendan Drum because people have forgotten him, but he was the man who said we had too many beds, many hospital beds. And he has been proven wrong, of course. But it was suggested to me yesterday on the programme by a texter that part of the logic of Brendan Drum's position was that you'd have loads of these primary care centres all around the country and that they would take care of a lot of the stuff that ends up in A&E and therefore you don't have this problem. But I don't think there's any doubt he was wrong about the number of beds, demographically and so on.
Absolutely wrong on that. But there was a point in what he was trying to say is that Ireland doesn't have sufficient step-down facilities. So if you are going into, or if you have a minor complaint, there is no reason for you really shouldn't be going into A&E. But at the moment, particularly at weekends, when a lot of these step-down or kind of elective procedures and clinics are closed because they operate on a Monday to Friday basis, your only option is A&E. So therefore, you have this massive logjam at the A&E, at the doors. And what we saw in Waterford and we saw elsewhere, where you literally had ambulances piling up. You had up to 7 or 8 ambulances piling up, essentially acting as trolleys, as David Cullinan, the Sinn Féin health spokesman, told me, you know, because there was nowhere else to put the people. So you literally have this idea or a situation that people couldn't get an ambulance for more than 90 minutes because they're literally queued up outside the hospital bay because there wasn't enough space inside. So there's
no. Is it in any way Donnelly's fault? Could he have done something different? Because he's not a doctor. His background is in business consultancy. But there are people who plan the winter plan. They know the ins and outs of hospitals. They know how it's done. And the winter plan, it seemed to be, you know, a good plan this year, But the triple-demic came along and it was overwhelmed. I mean, where does the blame lie if blame is to be apportioned?
Well, there's two things. Stephen Donnelly's in office since June 2020, so he's not responsible for the decades neglect or the kind of the systemic failures of successive governments to invest properly in our hospitals and to provide enough beds. As you said, we came from a position where the active policy was to reduce the number of beds. We obviously, they've had to reverse fare, but we've also had a decade, Pat, of this identity crisis in relation to the HSC. Fine Gael took office saying they wanted to abolish the HSC. That clearly became untenable, so they've had to reverse fare it on that. So you've had this idea of the HSC not really knowing what it is to do. Second of all, you've got a situation where the Minister for Health does not actually have the levers of power to effect change at his disposal. They're in the hands of the HSC.
Yeah, but the politicians did that to themselves for a very good reason. They didn't want the blame. Yeah. So they set up, the health boards used to be the buffer. Then they set up the HSC and it backed and forward and so on. But the idea was, not my fault, it's Paul Reid's fault or somebody's fault, Brendan Drum's fault, it's not my fault. So when they have no power to intervene, it's their own fault.
It is, but the fundamental problem with that position is that they're still electorally accountable. And in the public's mind, the Minister for Health is ultimately responsible. So you're left in the position, you take all the flack in from the opposition. You'll no doubt probably see a motion of no confidence in Stephen Donnelly in the next 10 days or so, as the Dáil reconvenes on the 18th. And what you'll see is Stephen Donnelly getting all the blame, but he has, as I said, he has none of the power at his disposal to directly improve things.
I'm wondering about the whole structure of the HSE and indeed government policies. People like John Crandall will be saying, look, let the money follow the patient. If St. Vincent's Hospital, where he works, if they do well, get more patients through, they should get more money. That kind of thing. All the voluntary hospitals and the public hospitals get paid on performance. At the moment, if they run out of cash, they run out of cash and they have deficits that they have to carry forward and so on. So good performance, good management is not rewarded.
No, it's actually almost penalised in the way the system works. Is actually good performance is penalised. And what you see is a real discrepancy between hospitals that are very good at moving their patients through, almost getting, because they either operate within budget or actually manage to kind of save a few quid here, rather than being allowed to re-divert that money to improve their lot in their own hospital, they're surrendering money back. It's kind of perverse in a way. The better you do, the more you get penalised. The worse you do, the more you end up getting rewarded. And I think there needs to be a fundamental shift in that. I've seen even on anecdotal examples, Pat, where people have had tailor-made care packages put together, this individualised care package, which works really successfully. But yet the system doesn't seem to be able to do that on a broad base. You can work on an ad hoc basis, but it doesn't work across the system. And also as well, one of the missed opportunities I feel, and this is something that is likely to come up again in discourse in the coming weeks, is that there was an opportunity for the state to buy two or three of the private hospitals during COVID-19, because they were essentially begging to be bought out at that stage. At a pretty reasonable price, that would have done an awful lot in terms of the capacity issue, particularly for more elective surgeries and procedures. They didn't do it. The risk averse nature of the state said, no, it's too risky. It'll take too long and be too cumbersome. Missed opportunity there. We're about 5,000 beds short in the system from where we need to be. That's not going to get sorted today, tomorrow.
And the problem is, if we look at the paediatric hospital in St. James and how long it's taken to build, how the overruns. I mean, if Jimmy Sheehan was willing to sell Hermitage or Blackrock Clinic or whatever, these were hospitals that were built efficiently and didn't cost the earth like the paediatric hospital. No. I mean, can you trust the state ever to build a hospital again? Or should you just bring in a hospital building company fit for purpose, who'll build one and flog it to the state at the cost plus 15% profit? Well,
there's a catalogue of examples of how the state has proven itself unable to do major projects. And going back, you look at the Port Tunnel, the overruns there and Dublin Airport Terminal 2, described by Michael O'Leary as a white elephant. Badly built, badly designed, all the rest of it. And now we're here in a situation where, as you say, the National Children's Hospital has become this great saga of cost overruns, and the government and the state are so invested now, they can't back out of it. They're kind of held over a barrel now because they have to see the project through, no matter what the cost. And obviously we know that there's this massive arbitration process going on with BAM, the main contractors, and there's, you know, disputes over kind of costings, etc. like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's taxpayers' money that's going down the Swanee, essentially, or, you know, there's a much greater cost. But to the accountability side of this, Stephen Donnelly, you know, begged, borrowed and stole, essentially, to be kept on in his job. You know, he pled the argument of continuity that, you know, to take him out and put somebody else in, you're going to lose 12 to 18 months of momentum. Mm. He needs to prove, he needs to now show a bit of delivery, he needs to show a bit of performance, and he needs to show a few results now that the trust, I suppose, invested in him by Micheál Martin was worth it.
Yeah, I'm just wondering how much competition there is between his general secretary and himself in terms of who calls the shots.
Well, there was a great story when Robert Watt was working with Brendan Howlin, and I don't know if it's true, but certainly it's done the rounds in Leinster House, but apparently Brendan Howlin often had to remind Robert Watt as who held the seal of office. And I wonder whether or not Stephen Donnelly has to do that currently in the Department of Health. But like, Robert Watt was put in to do a very specific job. You know, he came with a very strong reputation of being, you know, kind of a man who kind of broke down doors, got stuff done. But you see in letters that have gone between him and the HSE about, you know, the HSE were given an extra $350 million by way of kind of keeping the show on the road last year. And Robert Watt was making the point, where's the delivery, lads? So, there is a point where...
We gave you the money. Yeah, show us what you did.
Where are the results? And it just seems to go into and disappear into this enormous black hole, and there never seems to be proper accountability for it.
You've no doubt Stephen Donnelly would survive a vote of no confidence.
Well, I just look at the numbers, you know, for the Housing Minister, Dara O'Brien's motion of confidence, they won it by 20. There was enough support on the on the opposition benches and even in the independents. Health might be different. There might be a few who would be less likely to support Stephen Donnelly, but I still think the government would survive.
And the aforementioned minister is going to have to explain why he hasn't spent all the money in his department. He'll be doing that on the hard shoulder later on, I believe.
So. And this is bonkers. Like, at a time when you're thinking, when we're in such a crisis that you've such an underspend in the Department of Housing, that is unforgivable.
Yeah, although it does take time to spend money.
It does, and obviously there have been issues around delivery of projects, and obviously cost inflation has obviously impacted on timelines, and obviously two lockdowns during COVID has obviously had its impact as well.
Danny McConnell, political editor of the Irish Examiner. Danny, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.